The following presentation is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyard. All material is copyrighted by Layla Rudyard Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com. We hope you enjoy this presentation of A New Approach to America's Destiny, Part 2, a prophetic pre-Watergate discussion of America's prospects. This talk is 39 minutes long.
Now, the interesting thing, of course, is that we are doubly in a Plutonian situation at the present time, because the progress sun of the chart has just reached Pluto in the second house of the chart, and is reaching it. It started reaching it last summer when the election campaign began, and it will reach it finally, progress Pluto, this winter, just after the administration, the new administration come in power. So the election and the administration is typically under that Pluto rulership, you might say. Now Pluto, to some extent, deal with large organization, also with global things, things which also do not accept competition, so that you have, especially when you have Pluto in the second house there, you have a typical case of big business, trust, big organization, and mergers, anything which takes away all the little things which are not just for the one purpose, which is, of course, in business, profit and power. So that the fact that Pluto is in the second house in that chart is also very significant, especially that it opposes Mercury in the eighth house. Now Pluto and Mercury have a definite relationship. Mercury is the type of mind which is definitely related with the purpose of everyday life. It is at first the type of cunning of an animal who try to do the clever things which will make him survive in an hostile environment. It is even the cunning of the little child who play father against mother or sis against brother and things like that, you see. But out of that it develops the intellect, the analytical intellect, which learn how to take advantage of situation and so on. And of course it develops into the abstract mind and all that at a higher level. But it starts as more or less the servant of life. In mythology it was the servant of Jupiter, and Jupiter is the social sense, the power that built up society. Pluto, in the contrary, in its highest aspect, represents to the great cosmic pattern of the universe, the laws of the universe, the things which, again, brood no oppositions. They are the things which are what they are and nothing else, you see. Gravitation functions and the speed of life functions, whether anybody say anything against it, you know. It is a very basic pattern. So Pluto deals with those large structures, those large forms of organization. And so in America, you see, we have that opposition between, and the eighth house is the house of business, small business, because it is the result of those seven house things, of those contracts, those associations, those partnerships which every man is making in order to get the best advantage he can of the situation. So you have, at one hand, the little businessman, the investor, the man who buys shares, which are agreements, you know, on trust and paper and things like that. And on the other hand, Pluto in the second house, the large operation of power, of resources, the resources of the land and all that, the control of those resources and so forth. So you have there a very basic opposition, which is really the key to the development of so much of history of the United States. And the interesting thing is today that because the progress sun is at the end of Pluto, then there is obviously a very strong tendency that the life energy of the people, the nation, is stressed towards, is directed towards, and has to pay attention particularly to those Pluto factors. Now that may mean two different kind of things. You may pay attention to it because you don't like it and you want to upset it. Or you may pay attention to it because you feel that it is necessary for your well-being. Another thing which I could mention also before I go further on that is all the interest on pollution. Well, you see, remember what I said, that Pluto deals with purity. So you are trying to make the water pure and the air pure again. You are purging the air and the circumstance around the American people, trying to purge them so to make them pure again, which will be a hard task. But looking at the thing what I was saying about big business and all those kind of Plutonian forces in terms of resources. One of the things which intrigued me very much the last week when I was in Seattle and Portland, I talked to several young people in their 20s or very early 30s, people who were progressive, interested in spiritual things and so on. And all of them, except one, had voted for Nixon. And I tried to find out why, you see. And the reason was very interesting. It varied the reasons a little bit. But there were two reasons, essentially. He can handle situation better than apparently McGovern would have handled it. He's more effective, he's keener about when he's dealing with the Russian or the Chinese or whatever it is. He's a stronger man, and therefore we need a strong man now because God knows it's a hard world and things like that, you know. And the other one which is related to it, in other words, he's an effective executive. And they were afraid that McGovern wouldn't be. And as somebody told me, a very fine young girl told me, well, I hesitated, but I finally voted for Nixon because McGovern, I felt, was too human. Too nice, you know. Too nice, too idealistic, and too human. And that's a president that can be very dangerous when he has to decide fast about doing something. Now this is very interesting, you see, because as far as I can see, and of course I haven't talked to too many people, and here it may be a special group here, but I know in the South and to a large extent, and especially of course in the Middle West and all that, no doubt, undoubtedly, a great many of the young people, let's say between 18 and 30, have voted for Nixon. And I think that it wasn't always because their parents were Republican or because they were afraid to lose their job or something like that. That may be that. But because there was that sense that well, in this world, you need strong organizations. You need somebody who is strong at the helm of the nation and who can be very effective as an executive and an organizer. The interesting thing was also, as I have heard several times, was, well, it doesn't make much difference anyway. We didn't have much any choice. It would be much the same thing whether it would be the Democratic and the Republican. But it's also a very interesting thing, you see, because there is such a dissatisfaction with all the process of politics and all that, that it doesn't matter too very much. And therefore, the only question is a personal question. Whether you think the personality of that man was more effective for the job than the personality of another man. I've never seen any of those people that I talked to realize that there was actually a possibility of a conflict between two opposite ideas. Apparently, this concern, this realization that there may have been a complete two turns, two ways in which America might turn, and that the election, however the two representatives, the two men on the top might have been, that was not the point, but there was in their attitude and in the general approach two conflicting ideology or ideal. I don't think the thing came across during the election for some, during the campaign for some reason. Some people did. I saw a man yesterday, a photographer, who on the contrary was completely incensed because he said nobody realized and this and this and so on. But this is a very interesting thing, and it fits very well, you see, with that situation of that strong Plutonian feeling. Strong Plutonian thing in the chart. Now, what is what it will do in the future, of course, remain to be seen. And I'm not going to go into that too much because I don't know. But before I'll tell a little more other things, but before I do that, I would also like to mention a purely astrological factors, which is of great interest for any astrologer or astrologically inclined person. In the type of astrology which I have worked on, and quite a few people today, young people, are moving along that line, a great attention is placed on the gestalt, on the pattern, the whole pattern of the chart. Now, if you look at your chart there, you see that you have all the planet there within a 120 degree aspect, more or less, of Uranus and Saturn, and that the Moon and Pluto in the second house stand in opposition to it, completely opposition. It's like a kind of fan, where you hold a fan here and it's spread out like this, you see. Now, at the time of the Declaration of Independence and up to 1930, of course, Pluto was not known, and therefore it was not impinging upon the consciousness so much of the American people, or perhaps to the unconscious, but not to the consciousness. So that it made that the Moon alone, you see, was the only planet in the second house opposing, more or less opposing, all the other planets above the horizon mostly. And again, this is a very important thing. In the Gemini chart, most of the planets are below the horizon. And that, again, is very funny because it tends to create a sort of introversion more. And if there is anything which is extrovert, it's the typical American person, you see. So again, the Gemini rising chart doesn't make much sense from a strictly broad psychological point of view. Now, the Moon alone in the second house is very interesting because the Moon is more or less the capacity to adjust to an environment, the capacity to adjust to life. And the reason why it is also related to the mother is because for the baby, infant, at birth, he has no capacity to relate, to adjust himself to his environment. He cannot feed himself, he cannot wash himself, he cannot move very much, or things like that. So the mother does all those things for him, you see. And of course, if mom knows best, and it's much nicer to have mom decide everything than to find out for oneself how to adapt to life and adjust to a situation, then you develop a beautiful mother complex, you see. But beside that, you see, it is the general capacity to adjust to not so much the environment, but to the resources which you have to do with in order to keep alive. And so, of course, that was really the great struggle, you see, of 1776. I mean, of course, it started a century before. But still, at that time, there was still the great capacity, the great problem of developing the West and building America. I mean, what we call America today. And so, the moon being in the second house there forced all the attention of the people, as it were, the massing of all those energies of the planets above there, focusing itself into that problem of how to handle resources, how to build resources. And of course, sure, realize that in no country in the world has the making of money been so important as in America, as a focal point of attention. People have wanted to make money everywhere, of course, but the acquisition of money, the owning of money and all that has never had quite the total meaning that it had to in America, where, because in other countries there was much more of the class, culture, education, religious position and all those things like that. Teachers, for instance, which had high respect and so on. But here it is the possession which is the essential things, you see. And it has been so all through the 19th century. And therefore, in a certain sense, a materialistic approach, which, of course, is a second house approach, because that is the house which deals with what you own, what you have to express with, including your body, to some extent, you see, or at least the energies and the power of your body, capacities and all that. So this, again, to my mind, fits very well. And when Pluto came, you see, after the First World War, and of course, its presence, you might say, was felt especially after the conjunction of Neptune and Pluto in 1891-92, which more or less started what you might call the New Age, the electronic age, not the Aquarian age, but the electronic age, with the discovery of X-rays and radium and all those things like that. And since that time, you see, then that Pluto factor of large-scale organization came to the fore, because the very fact that you discover those awesome powers of the atom, of radioactivity and all that, made large-scale organization imperative. You see. And that is the situation which we are facing today, of course. If we are going to have a global world along the line of the present type of society, then you have to have large-scale organization. And a large-scale organization, in that sense, is a Plutonian thing. And considering the diversity of opinion and the conflicts between nation, race, and temperament and all that, such an organization could hardly be possible without a very dominant, powerful organization at the top. Therefore, some sort of at least quasi-totalitarian system. So this is, in that sense, a Plutonian age. How to integrate that need for a Plutonian type of organization with a Neptunian broad understanding and compassion for people and the sense of universal love and all that, this is the great problem of our age. And fortunately, Neptune and Pluto are in constructive sextile aspect for about 90 years. Since 1940, they have been started and they will remain there till about 2050 or so. And that happened because of the very strange combination between the orbits of Neptune and Pluto. And so at every 248 years or so, there is a time in which those two planets remain in certain definite aspect, which kept back and forth for these 90 years. Because Pluto, which is farther than Neptune, at a certain time managed to cross into the orbit of Neptune because it has a very elongated orbit. And during that time, it goes a little faster than Neptune. So it catches over Neptune, and then Neptune finally goes forward. And so that for 90 years, Neptune and Pluto keep crossing each other. Not crossing in conjunction, but cross. I mean, they move. The sextile is one way or this way, and so on. So, in the 18th century, you see, there was a long trine aspect, 120 degrees. You see, which lasted for most of the 18th century, which, interestingly enough, is called the Age of Enlightenment. It was a strange kind of enlightenment, but still, it was in a sense enlightenment at an intellectual level, and that enlightenment is to some extent the expression of the trine aspect in astrology, or vision, or broad understanding of things. Now it is the sextile, which is a practical aspect, it's a building aspect, it's it tries to bring the thing into concrete existence. So in a certain sense, after 200 years, you see, we're celebrating soon the 200-year thing, there is a possibility, perhaps, to bring the ideal of the 18th century, which were the building of our nation, and of course the father of the United States of America, where most of them Mason, Rosicrucian, some of them belonging to occult groups and things like that. And there is a possibility, the possibility is there, that this kind of things could become more practically applied. While during the 19th century, and at the time of the conjunction, at the end there, everything went to really distort the picture of the American ideal, because the Industrial Revolution had produced such tremendous release of power and energies that these energies, unfortunately, instead of being used for the service of the people at large, were captured, cornered by greedy and ruthless people who had capacity for organization or who had money to start with and things like that. And so that the American ideal was completely distorted during the 19th century, especially immediately after the Civil War. Theoretically, it could be expressed and made concrete during the period of this sextile, which means now, and particularly later on, after Pluto comes closer to the Sun and Neptune reaches perihelion and into Scorpio during 1989-1990, which are very important time with a massing of planets in Capricorn. And almost every astrologer has it tends to believe that something rather basic is going to happen at that time, whether it means reconstruction after a crisis, or whether it means that there will be a great profound upset in the earth itself, maybe moving of the pole or earthquake or God knows what, which will alter the picture quite much for humanity and may enable mankind to organize in a better way, possibly after getting rid of a great deal of surplus and unnecessary population by whatever means. Now, all this, you see, is something which we are facing as a possibility. And there is a very interesting possibility in 1976, because at that time, according to that chart, Neptune will be moving over the ascendant of the chart. Now, this, of course, can mean two different things. It can be very positive or it could be very negative. It could mean, of course, a great spiritual, religious, idealistic movement, a kind of nationwide, large-scale hippie type of things, perhaps, hopefully, without the drugs. And but anyway, a great movement of organizing underneath, you might say, perhaps underground in some way, but something which will really of the nature of a religious movement, you might say. Or else, it could mean negatively that the public, the American type of people, will be once more glamorized and totally fooled under the pretext of beautiful glamour, beautiful world, beautiful front things which will mask something quite different. The interesting thing, of course, it will be the next election, you see. And an interesting thing also is that at the same time there will be a rather hard and difficult aspect. And particularly the conjunction of, Pluto will move by transit over Saturn of the natal chart, which deal with the administration, the executive, and also constitution and all that. Something could happen to the constitution of a rather Plutonian kind of type. There are also other things which take place at that time, which might mean all sorts of things, but there seem to be two very definite influences, one Neptunian and the other Plutonian, and which one will win, or whether the two can be integrated in some way or another. Of course, I am no prophet to be able to tell you that. I might mention that and the next election, again, it seems that all those elections bring just very important transits to that chart, you see, which to my mind makes it very significant because we are obviously at a very critical turning point in the world and particularly in our nation. Now, in October, November 1980, you see, Saturn and Jupiter will be in conjunction three times perhaps not in conjunction at exactly that time, but they will pass over the midheaven of the chart on that time, that fall 1980, just about the time of the elections. And in September and October 1981, they both will move over the natal Saturn, which will be completing another cycle of Saturn and of Jupiter together, a 60-year cycle in that sense. It is entirely possible that we would have another kind of executive or another type of administration at that time, which can, of course, remain to be seen. Now, all this is not to be taken as a negative or pessimistic outlook, because Anything can happen as well at the constructive level as the not so constructive level. The things which make it difficult to understand and difficult to see what is important, you see, is that, and that is the thing that is confusing, you see, so many people, even the most idealistic young people, is that we are at a period where if the society, the world society, is going to retain its technology and its basic kind of patterns which it has today, general type of vast business organization and trade and all the conflict, semi-cold war, balance of power, and all those things like that. If it is to go along that line, then, of course, there is need for very large-scale type of organization, which in that sense, of course, can be called plutonium. And any such kind of large-scale organization require some sort of a very strong central power to keep the thing integrated, or else it just simply break down into a thousand of pieces. You have the same thing taking place, for instance, in that great religious movement that perhaps some of you know, the Baha'i movement, which was begun 150 years ago almost, not quite, but in Persia, and as adherent all over the world. This is the first great religious movement, which was based on the unity of all the people, all race, class, creed, color, labor and capital and everything, and which presented series of laws divinely revealed to establish a new order of society. Very definite principle with a world parliament, a world organization, world commerce, world complete global humanity. It was the first movement in the world that has ever produced a very definite pattern for the complete unity of all people and in an organized form with a world parliament and very definite things from local assembly to national assembly to world assembly and all those things like that. Well, the movement, being a kind of mass movement, had to be strongly organized and strongly led. And therefore, they also had quite a great deal of spiritual totalitarianism, if you want to put it that way, based on love and trust and friendship between all the people and race and all that. But still very definite. If you broke the pattern of the top administration and you were nicely purged away, excommunicated in a sense. But you had to have that, you see, in that sense, if you want to create a world organization. Because otherwise the centrifugal forces of individualism are so strong today in the world that they would break it apart. So that is the dilemma, of course, that we find ourselves in. How to integrate that demand for a strong central order and structure with a vast spiritual consciousness and compassion and love and so on. And that is the great problem we have to face. And I think it has much bearing on what young people who are progressive, who have been very much interested in Oriental philosophy, mystical things, and have rebelled against their European culture, their intellectualism, their school, their college, and all that, and have had more or less universalistic or cosmic or pseudo-cosmic experience and things like that. It brings to them a very great challenge, as I see it, to try to integrate that Neptunian expression, you might say, of the typical flower power, love power, you know, hippie things and all that in the beginning, in the early days, with a Plutonian sense of reality. And today, I think more than anything else, and those Plutonian emphasis on the chart stresses the fact that we cannot constructively indulge in any form of escape from reality and the concrete reality of this day and age and of the type of society which is there whether we like it or not. You see. But this is a very important thing because it is not the time to fly to India and take lots of things which will take you in a otherworldly kind of atmosphere or inner feeling of pure subjectivity and dreamlike things and so on. This is not the time to try to fly away in the astral plane and leave your body and all those things of that nature. It is the time to work concretely with reality, but to work at it in terms of spiritual ideal. To organize without being caught in organization. To organize without the rigidity of structural pattern. To show in smaller group and all that how you can be ordered, you can be well organized, you can have a sense of beauty, which means order, sense of elegance, a sense of being therefore at the best that you can in this world as it is here and now. Because that is the only way you are going to be able to give an example to the great organization of that world and to put your influence, bring your influence to them. And you can do it because you have done it. The fashion of the hippies and all that have spread all over the world. The youth can completely mold the mentality of the world as a whole, if they have any sense of purpose and dedication and realistic, concrete devotion and dedication to humanity and not to themselves. And that is the great challenge, you see. And if you don't meet that challenge, there is only two solutions. You will have world fascism or a complete chaos through revolution. And I think you are in the at a crucial time when there is no time to lose to transform your attitude to a large extent to the world, to yourself, and to any group that you are dealing with so that things are as focalized, as harmonized in a structured and in a realistic way as can possibly be while keeping the flame and the light of spiritual reality and truth alive, not only in yourself as an individual, but in your groups and in humanity as a whole. And my fervent wish at the end of my life is that you can carry on and try to do what you can to change the world. Thank you very much.
This is the end of part two of A New Approach to America's Destiny by Dane Rudyar. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Layla Rudyar Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar at www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com.